understand that life happens, and sometimes you need a little financial boost. That's why at C-Plant Federal Credit Union, we offer low-rate loans tailored to your needs. Whether it's a car loan, a personal loan, or anything in between, we've got you covered. Learn more at cplant.com or visit any of C-Plant Federal Credit Union's 9 local branches. Member NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Good Monday morning, and I want to start off this week by sharing some information about the Cave and Rock Ferry. Been talking with local officials and the ferry operators, and then some local officials in state government. And basically, it looks like there is some things going on, some conversations being had, and maybe even a tentative plan that could get this thing back in operation. However, those are taking a lot of time because each state has to agree to it. And so far, the plan that's being discussed has not even been presented to the ferry operator. But it's something I believe, based on my understanding, would be acceptable. And waiting now for Illinois to sign off on the idea, and then it'll have to come back to Kentucky for final approval. Just holding out hope that this will be something that can work. I would call it guarded optimism at this point, because it's something rather unique and would require things falling into place in the future. So I can't disclose any more details at this point, because the folks who are talking to me about this have asked that it not be made public. But just to know that talks are ongoing, there is a plan, nuts and bolts, if you will, that are being discussed about how this thing could all come back together and get going again. So, as you remember, back in 1994, the ferry shut down for several months before, almost 6 months before it opened back up. Of course, back then it was, there was a $5 fee to cross the ferry before it closed. And when it opened back up, it was a free service operated by the two states with a private contractor. And that's where we are today. And Lonnie Lewis has held that contract to operate the ferry ever since 1994. And he does have a franchise to operate the ferry at this precise location on the Ohio River. So without an agreement or some other legal action to change the situation there at the Cave and Rock Ferry crossing, this is where we're at, and we're at an impasse. So we'll keep you briefed on that, and we'll be right back in just a moment with some more news, and then we're going to go over to the Ben E. Clement Mineral Museum and visit with Andrea Clement about the area's fluor spar and mining heritage and the big event coming up this weekend to celebrate that.
Get ready, Western Kentucky. Catawba Days is back on August 22nd at Silver Cliff Park and Catawba Beach. We're bringing the heat with free carnival rides, free kayak rides, a free foam party, and free live music from High Noon Moon. From the Zoomer to the Pirate's Revenge, if it's a ride, it's free. Now, while the fun is on us, make sure to bring a little spending money for our incredible food trucks and arts and crafts vendors. Grab some barbecue, shaved ice, or a unique handmade gift to remember the day. That's Catawba Days, August 22nd on Lake Barkley. It's the ultimate summer celebration. See you at the beach.
Well, I feel like I've neglected you in the Department of Sports over the past few weeks, because I don't know, things just kind of slow down in the summer as school sports is out and not much else going on around. But there's some things starting to pick up here. It's time to sign up for youth soccer in Crittenden County. It's also time to sign up for fall baseball and softball. If you have a child interested in youth soccer, you can go to the Crittenden County Youth Soccer Association Facebook page. That's at CYSA on Facebook. Or you can pick up a registration form at the Crittenden County Elementary School, Farmers Bank, or the Crittenden Press. And there's a lot more information on youth soccer in the Crittenden Press this week. Also, softball and baseball registration is underway for youngsters 12 and under. There are three divisions, 8 under, 10 under, and 12 under. And players will play in the division this fall that they will play in if they play ball in the spring. So that gets them ready for the spring season. This is a non-scorekeeping league in the fall, if you will. They don't keep score, but they play. It's just kind of a developmental league. And you can pick up a registration form at YTG Insurance or the Crittenden Press. And it's also available at the Dugout Club's Facebook page. If you are a golfer, it's time for the Crittenden County Quarterback Club annual golf fundraiser. This is a four-person scramble. It's called the Victor Pippi Harden and Ronnie Myers Invitational. It will be held on August the 12th. That's on a Wednesday at Marion Country Club. If you would like to play in that, get you a four-man team and give Derek Myers a shout. And his number is 270-704-1225. And that's the August 12th Crittenden County Quarterback Club Golf Tournament. And for all you pickleballers, August 15th out at Marion Crittenden County Park, there will be a pickleball tournament that will benefit the Crittenden County High School Student HOSA program. Participants must register by August 8th, so just around the corner. Sign up and get more information from Macy Bell Hardesty. She's a member of that high school program that's putting this on, and her phone number is 270-704-9413. Now, HOSA is an acronym for Health Occupations Students of America, and it's an organization designed to support and inspire a new generation of healthcare professionals. So a great cause. Pickleball tournament, August 15th, Marion Crittenden County Park.
Are you hungry for slow-cooked, fall-off-the-bone flavor? Stop by Marion Pit Barbecue, a local legend serving up mouth-watering barbecue for over 40 years. From juicy ribs and chicken to our famous pulled pork, Marion Pit Barbecue offers big portions and even bigger value 7 days a week. On Tuesday and Friday, try our loaded smoked potato. Wednesday and Saturday, hickory smoked ribs. And Thursday and Sunday, barbecue chickens. Marion Pit Barbecue, located on South Main Street in Marion. Come hungry, leave happy. Don't forget the sauce.
Well, it's time to start thinking about the weekend, even though it's Monday morning. But some things going on you'll want to know about. Down in Fredonia will be the Fredonia's Festival. And this is an annual event. They have a parade on Friday night, and Donnie Conway has been chosen as the grand marshal of that parade. And then on Saturday, a lot of great food and fun, all sorts of activities for children and adults, giveaways, and it's just a great time down in Fredonia, and they do a great job of putting on this event. So get down there. You know, I like to get down there mid-morning and stick around and at least eat some lunch. But it goes on into the early afternoon. They have ball games in the mornings there on the field at Buddy Rogers Park. So head down to Fredonia and enjoy that. Also, make plans on Saturday morning to be at Foes Hall and the Ben E. Clement Mineral Museum. There will be a celebration of the 100-year anniversary of the rescue of miners who were trapped in the Hudson Mine, which was located down in the edge of Livingston County, affected all of Livingston and Crittenden County. Of course, this was all a huge fluorspar district. This thing garnered national attention. And we're going to hear all about that from Andrea Clement. She is one of the directors of the Clement Mineral Museum that's located here in Marion. So we're going to visit with her, and you're going to find out all you need to know about this event on August 8th, this coming Saturday at Foes Hall and the Clement Mineral Museum.
So I want to thank Andrea Clement for coming on this morning and discussing Saturday's big event in Marion, Kentucky. This is a remembrance of the Hudson Mine catastrophe, which turned out pretty good, and I'll let Andrea explain that. But of course, Andrea is very much tied to the Ben E. Clement Mineral Museum, which was her grandfather, and she is among those that operate the museum now. And Andrea, just tell us what this Hudson Mine Memorial Day, tell us about it.
Yeah, so this this Hudson Mine Centennial Celebration, it truly did go from catastrophe to a celebration, to a story worth celebrating for sure. So people need to be here at Foes Hall at between 9 and 10 for sure for registration. And the reason being is the stuff you don't want to miss is at 10 o'clock, we will have an overview based off of A.M. Shelby's report of what happened. And the relief effort, the rescue effort, is we're going to do a play-by-play of that. So you're going to find out the odds that the rescuers were up against.
And this is going to be someone reading or?
We have a presentation. Uh-huh. We're going to have pictures. We have pictures of the entire event.
And is this going to be up on a screen?
And this is going to be up on a screen. Uh-huh. And we're going to have Bo Moody that is going to give mm-hmm. the overview of this because he's going to give some technical things that are above my pay grade. And yeah, so.
And all this is at the museum.
Yes, this is at Foes Hall.
It'll be, okay.
It'll be at Foes Hall.
The presentation will be
at Foes Hall, and that's why we've got some important things that will be going on that day that we need people to register. We need them to register before 10, mm-hmm. And we'll start at 10 o'clock. So we'll have an overview of what happened above ground, and this truly is a miraculous rescue. Mm-hmm. I like to tell people that it was Murphy's Law in effect. Anything and everything that could go wrong did go wrong, and they never gave up. It was not just the fluorspar mining companies that quickly band together, but we also had the coal industry mm-hmm. that came to aid.
And this was certainly a national news story at the time.
This went international. When we were doing the research with the articles, we even found articles that came out in England mm-hmm. about this cave-in. I would say that this is America's version of the 2010 Chilean mine cave-in mm-hmm. rescue.
And this happened, like I said, 100 years ago this week, is that right?
Or yes, the 5th. It actually started okay. the 5th. And wouldn't you like to know that the Chilean 2010 cave-in happened August 5th
wow.
as well? So anyway, it was the 5th through the 12th. They got rescued on the 12th. But
there were nine. Tell me again, nine.
There were six.
Six.
That
men.
That were trapped. Yeah. So what happened is, you've got. This was before the days of safety programs, mm-hmm. MSHA, right? Mm-hmm. So your safety program were the older, seasoned miners counseling new or younger miners what to look for, what to do, what not to do. A lot of them, you know, they would choose to go into these mines knowing the conditions and not knowing if they were going to come out, come home that night. They lost brothers, they lost fathers, you know. This was not safe.
And how deep down were they?
So this was like 150 feet down, 160 feet down.
And, you know, I guess spoiler alert maybe, how'd they get them out?
Okay, so this, the Hudson Mine, they started mining out there in the 1890s, and mm-hmm. they had several operations. They would go out there and mine for a while and leave, and then come back later on and leave. And so this mine had sat abandoned for quite a while, and they had this pit that they started dumping like log washer refuse and, you know, just their garbage, whatever they were just tossing in there. And they had sunk another shaft further on down. Mm-hmm. But they sunk the shaft, and of course your listeners can't see my hand gestures, but they sunk a new shaft. And in the 20s, they had this level that was kind of going towards underneath that pit. Okay. And this pit was like 90 feet deep and full of water and full of muck and mm-hmm. old timbers and miners' clothing, you know, yeah. like it was just a dump.
A cesspool.
And so they, the older miners were telling the younger ones, hey, this old shaft, this old abandoned part, it's going to give way. And here you guys, here's the main shaft, the new shaft, here's the level, and here's the pit. When that thing caves in, that is going to flood the level, and it's gravity, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going to rush. Your only chance of survival is to outrun it.
And get to high ground.
And get to high ground down below mm-hmm. in the stope, and the stope is what they're mining, right? Mm-hmm. So there were two guys that were working on one part, and then there were four working in the stope, there were three and four. Okay, so there were four in the stope and three on the level, and the three heard that the snapping of the timbers. Mm-hmm. And so two of them went running, got in a mining tub. The third one, who was Roy James, he ran up the stope to let the other men know and got trapped. So the two that got in the tub, that water rushed in and pushed that heavy tub up
and out.
And they were able to climb out of yeah. the shaft, the main shaft, and went and told people what was going
with
on.
That happened. The others were trapped.
Yeah, that happened between 9 and 10 p.m. that the first night. And so they only had four matches mm-hmm. amongst them. They
and
didn't
no
have any food. They didn't have anything to drink. They had a Prince Albert tobacco can, and it was cold. It yeah. was so cold. Well, so the mining companies, they quickly had a meeting later, early in the morning the next day, and they had made the vow, and this is documented, that they said that they would spare no expense to get these men out. Mm-hmm. And so they sent in their best workers, they sent in their best equipment, huge centrifugal pump, a Keystone drill rig for oil drilling. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, all of this stuff, they dispatched quickly on the roads. Well, the roads were rough stuff yeah. back then, but the equipment, before they could even get it in, the tractors were breaking down, and they had to weld through the night to get new wheels on this stuff to get this equipment out there. They broke down several times, and then they mm-hmm. finally got them in, and within 30 minutes of it working, a bearing went out in the brand new pump. And so anyway, they get this new pump in from Memphis, Tennessee, and that bearing goes out, so they quickly order a replacement part. The logistics failed on that one because the person that was supposed to expedite it didn't get it on the train in time, and so the rail system had a failure with getting it on the expedited train to Princeton. And so the vice president of the company, he was a aviation enthusiast. Well, he gets his pilot, they jump in a plane, they fly into Salem, land in the field. They sent a truck out to go pick him up in the replacement part, and the truck breaks down. So it is just everything going on. They finally get the part in, they get it running, and then it shuts down. You want to know why? Because the power plant went down directly in the on site. So, I mean, they were just against all odds. They never stopped, though. Mm-hmm. They kept pumping. They kept, there was some form of pumping going on throughout the entire time. And so anyway, they were hoping that the men had been able to get into the stope, but they just weren't sure.
They weren't sure. And they were down there a week, right?
They were down there a week. Yeah. And so there were thousands of people that came out, thousands. And so it was so many people that it was impeding the important stuff getting in. Mm-hmm. They called the National Guard. The National Guard ended up overseeing food distribution. It was phenomenal. Everyone had hot coffee.
To the rescuers.
To the rescues.
Yeah, to feed the rescuers.
Yeah, yeah. And so it even brought in folks that were spiritists. There was a guy named Hi Smiley that came in from out of state. And he claimed that by the spirit, he could go through the rocks and rescue the men. And he eventually got ran out, and they kept going. But they were hoping to get air and get food and supplies by drilling drilling down in. But the drill kept reflecting off the rocks, so they weren't successful about doing that. And then they kept getting the stuff out. And at one point, the night before the rescue, this radio station that just closed down this year, they had reached out to the mining outfit, and they were like, would you like us to, send one of our operators out there, drop a mic, and see if we can hear any voices? And they said, okay. So they send their radio guy in a plane with a pilot by the name of Upside Down Kirk. I think that Kirk was his name. But anyway,
where did he come out of?
Indiana, Evansville.
Okay.
And so they come in and they drop that mic, and sure enough,
they could hear them.
They could hear the men's voices. It didn't go out. You don't want to get false hope going on, but they did let the people that needed to know that they heard voices. Yeah. And so that next morning, they got them out.
Yeah. Well, it's just a fascinating story, and I know you're going to have remembrances that the things that people actually said, the miners in their own words type, that's going to be part of this.
And
some of the families of those, some of these families are still around here.
Exactly.
The descendants of these folks who were trapped. And this mine, just to give our listeners some context, is actually down in the edge of Livingston County, just south of Salem, back on off of Pinckneyville Road there. Mm-hmm. In Livingston County. But just a fascinating story. And if anybody wants to come out now, is there a fee to get in?
No.
It's all free.
When you hear the story, everyone gave what they had, the entire community, they spared no expense. And so I really wanted this to be a day of celebration. Mm-hmm. And so what we'll do is we'll have an overview, like I said, above ground, but then we're going to have direct quotes from the miners that were rescued about what they endured underground. And then we'll have some guest speakers coming in that work in mining inspection that will talk about safety and, you know, different things. And this, what was neat about this was that because of this cave-in and how much attention it garnered, it changed mine safety for floor spar. In fact, they were like, we need inspections going on for the floor spar industry.
Yeah,
so it was a game changer for safety.
Forerunner of the MSHA.
The
acronym there for the mine inspection. What, safety?
Safety. I don't know.
I can't quote the entire, what the acronym for. I know it's for mine safety.
Yeah.
But all right. Well, that's great. I hope you fill Foes Hall up, and I'm sure you'll have some people who want to come through the museum over the weekend. It's just a fascinating place for people to come in and see the what the heritage of the community's mining is all about. So thank you, Andrew. Appreciate your time this morning, and look forward to Saturday morning.
Me too. Thank you.
And that's going to be a wrap on this morning's program. We appreciate everyone listening in, and we will talk to you a little later in the week. This has been Chris Evans reporting for the Crittenden Press.